Okay, my presentation is on the definition of equity and distinction between liabilities and equity instruments. And yeah, again, these are my personal comments and views. So again, you know, obviously we had a look at the ASAP comment letters in this on this particular area, and again, not to go into the detail which you already are aware of. Effectively coming out of this, my proposal for the way forward in terms of what the conceptual framework should address, so this is slide four, would be that I think based on most of the ASAF comment letters, that equity is a residual and it should therefore be defined as a residual, and I think many supported the strict liability approach. But I think that, so I think as a concept, that certainly is, you know, what the ISB should then be working on. But a couple of things which need to be addressed in this regard then, the reporting entity, for one of them, which I'll go into more detail. Also, I've said more common features of instruments and their impact on the definition of a liability, and then also the units of account. So I will go into those in a little bit more detail. And then I've also set out what the conceptual framework should not address. So the one being the measurement of different classes of equity and then exceptions to the definition. So I'm going to go through those in a bit more detail. So moving on to slide number six then, is that having taken or accepted that equity is a residual, I think that the framework needs to contain clear and robust concepts and definitions that will aid the ISB in setting specific standards and also provide commentators with a solid foundation from which to comment on proposals put forward by the ISB when setting or amending standards. So, you know, example that I gave is that if the different elements of the definition of a liability are not clear, then there's a risk that we have inconsistent standards. And also that commentators have diverse frames of references. And I think, again, just to highlight this, I raised the example of the issuing of IFRIC 21, which to me highlighted that there are diverse views currently on when there is a present obligation from a past event, yet each commentator believes that their view is consistent with the definition of a liability in the current conceptual framework and in IS 37. So for me, that highlights the fact that maybe, although the definition appears to be clear, people are reading it differently and maybe, you know, interpreting the different aspects and practical applications differently. And my concern there is that, and this is a comment which is relevant to the framework as a whole, is that if concepts are not clear and robust, in future, when commentators are asked whether or not they agree with a particular proposal, well, if everybody's starting on a different page, well, that also adds to the difficulty of setting standards, because it needs to be based on these clear concepts. Is this an appropriate way forward? So as a result, as I said, I think, and again, maybe this area here is not necessarily per se in the equity liability section. Maybe it sits more just in the liability section around the definition of a liability with a little bit of overlap, so the actual placement can be debatable. Then continuing on with the clear and robust concepts, what I mean by this is that while the conceptual framework should not address specific instruments per se, because yes, they could vary throughout the world, I do think that it's important at a conceptual framework level to sort of stress test the definitions and the principles by looking at certain types of common features as such. And as I said, the discussion paper already contained two particular sort of common features. And there was explanations as to how the definition of a liability would actually come into play. So the two that the discussion paper addressed was obligations to deliver shares And based on the definition of a liability, as proposed currently, says, well, it's an obligation to, you know, which will be settled in resources of the entity. And the point that the discussion paper made was that an entity's own shares are not resources of the entity. So in terms of the definition of a liability, obligations to be settled in the entity's shares hence do not meet the definition of a liability. The other area that or point that was raised in the discussion paper is obligations which will only be settled upon liquidation. And again, you know, the discussion paper concludes, well, you know, there, although perhaps doesn't say this in so many words, and maybe this is what I would recommend be added, is that, you know, everybody, every stakeholder as such, including your ordinary shareholders, get paid out in that one event being liquidation. So if that is the event in which liabilities are only required to be settled, well, then the conclusion is that does not give rise to a present obligation sort of in the ordinary course of the entity, and as a result, in terms of the definition, that would not be a liability. So I think in addition to those two aspects, I have suggested some others which I've described as being common characteristics or features of instruments. So this is on slide 8, which I do believe, you know, as they should be addressed at a conceptual framework level to facilitate a clear and consistent understanding. So, for example, settlements at the option of the holder. So how does that come into play in terms of the definition of a liability? What is the present obligation from a past event? What happens if settlement is only at the option of the issuer? How should the definition be applied? If there are settlement choices at the option of the holder or the issuer, so it might be that there's a choice of settlement, it might mean that there's a choice of settlement maybe in shares or maybe in cash. So again, what does the combination of those choices mean? There could be settlement contingent on events outside the control of the issuer. And here, it also ties in with the other point that I raised just now and perhaps didn't go into a lot of detail is around the reporting entity. So a lot of commentators also raised the point around, well, what is the reporting entity? And so if we do say that there are settlement choices at the option of the holder or the issuer, so in terms of the issuer here, you know, how easy is it to determine if something is within the control of the issuer being the entity or not? Things like economic compulsion, if there are settlement options with no or limited substance, if there are non-discretionary payments of a certain percentage of future profits. I think the interesting one there is, you know, trying to clarify if the amount of the liability is dependent upon something which only arises in the future, i.e. in this case the future profits, what does that do in the context of a present obligation from a past event? So, as I say, while I don't think that, you know, the conceptual framework should get bogged down in specific instruments, I think that a lot of these features need to be considered at this level to make sure that there is a consistent understanding. Then moving on to slide number 9, as I said, I think the conceptual framework should then be internally consistent. So in other words, if equity is to be defined as the residual of assets recognized less liabilities recognized, I sort of think that, you know, effectively at a conceptual level, equity is easy to determine. It is simply this residual. So that's total equity is that residual. But as I mentioned, you know, one needs to be clear what is the reporting entity to understand, well, what are assets and what are liabilities. And so, again, I don't think that this is reserved for the section on equity and liability per se, but it goes back to saying, well, what is an asset? If an asset is a resource of the entity, well, what is the entity we're talking about? And if something is a liability of the entity, well, is it clear what entity we're talking about? And so there, from the comment letters, there were some concerns raised around, is the reporting entity, you know, from an owner perspective, or is it sort of more from the legal entity perspective? And I think that point needs to be clarified. And the definition of equity is simply the resultant of that definition being the residual of assets recognized less liabilities recognized. So, and then also another point which the conceptual framework should address is some discussion of the unit of account. So again, while instruments can take various forms, etc., I think the conceptual framework should acknowledge how the standards should then be set based on the conceptual framework. In other words, should it be on the basis of looking at an instrument as a whole, or should it be based on the fact that there could be elements within an instrument that meet the definition of equity or meet the definition of liability? And here the board needs to decide whether or not there's specific principles or concepts to define that relevant unit of account, or it's simply an acknowledgement in the framework that an instrument may contain elements of both, and then leave it up to a particular standard to determine the unit of account, and is the unit of account at a much lower level or at a higher level. So here, effectively, we're talking about the traditional compound instruments, where legally it's one instrument, but there are elements of both. So that's effectively the areas which I think the conceptual framework should address. Moving on to the areas that I think that the conceptual framework should not address, and that is the different classes of equity. I think the conceptual framework should simply deal with total equity and not different classes of equity, and I think that should be at a standards level. So again, should there be an allocation of total equity to the different classes, the way we currently do for some equity, for example, NCI, or should it be on some other different basis? So I think that the conceptual framework should simply acknowledge that there could very well be different classes of equity, but in total they all meet the definition of equity, and leave it up to an individual standard to deal with the measurement. Also, I think that the conceptual framework should deal with concepts, and so therefore do not propose that within the framework we already have an anticipation that at a standards level there could already be an exception to the definition. So for example, as was put forward, maybe a possibility to say that certain items, even though they meet the definition of a liability, they would still be able to be presented as equity because the entity wouldn't have any equity. To me, that just doesn't seem to be right for a conceptual framework. I think just as in other areas in the conceptual framework, at a standards level, there may very well be exceptions or deviations, but I certainly wouldn't propose that is already considered at the conceptual framework level.
Thank you, Kim. Then Linda is going to talk on the measurement.
Oh yeah, sure. So there was just a short slide deck that was on your desk this morning that we put forward. It does reflect basically a summary of the paper that we sent, which was labeled 6C, that will hopefully help get this conversation started. What we chose to do in the paper was to do a comprehensive review of the letters as requested by HF members. And what we're trying to do is get a discussion started around giving the ISB some strategic input in terms of what the measurement section should or should not cover, and suggest some options on the way forward. If you look at slide 3, I think it's fair to say that there's strong support for guidance on measurement, and almost everybody, virtually everybody said that the conceptual framework should contain concepts as opposed to detailed information. However, when it came to articulating what those concepts were, I think you saw very clearly that we all struggled. So we have empathy for what you're trying to do in terms of deciding what those concepts should be. A common theme, again looking at slide 3, a common theme from all ASAP members was that there are some fundamental aspects that need further consideration, and a call for developing measurement guidance that will provide foundation for developing consistent measurement requirements in IFRS. I think that where you get into the tension is the notion of how much can be done when. And so, again, there seem to be some thoughts in terms of how to do that. If you look at slide four, the first notion in terms of aspects that need development, we're talking about the objective of measurement. And it talks, the comment letters talked about how to assess the way to provide relevant information about the resources of the entity, the claims against it, the changes in the resources and claims, things that would be decision useful information. And then there was also discussions around how efficient and effective the entity was. Some people did bring in the concept of stewardship there. And so were these objectives consistent with each other, or were they competed? How are you going to prioritize which objective should be most important in different topic areas? There was also support for the assessment of measurement based on relevance of information provided on the statement of financial position versus the statement of performance, and there were calls to further develop how this could be assessed so that it could be applied consistently, including how to minimize the use of OCI. So several letters mentioned the notion of minimizing the use of OCI. Some talked about considering also the work that's already been done in terms of performance reporting, and some called for linking the concept to identifying specific qualities around in the area of measurement. The other key concept on slide five now that people talked about, the notion of the business model came up frequently. The notion, again, is as mentioned previously just by Kim, around the guidance around the unit of account, the notion of identifying relevant measurements, the notion of having the conceptual framework consider what you do in terms of opportunities for bias, and then there were some other characteristics mentioned as well. I think it's fair to say that many ASAF members expressed strongly that the conceptual framework must be of high quality and forward-looking. It needs to be the underpinnings for development of future standards. And they question whether or not, in the timeline that you are currently working, whether some of these key objectives can actually be researched and developed within that timeline. And so in some cases, you saw the notion of proposing a phased approach to doing something where you could keep with your timeline and then target other areas for further development. So what we tried to do is on slide six and seven, we in essence suggested two ways that on slide six we said we gave you some options where you would, you know, where you could pick one of those options and explain why you had that in terms of your thoughts. And slide seven, we basically said, you know, if you want the ISP to do this and they want to stick with their proposed timelines, which ones would you focus on? Which ones would you focus on first? Which ones would you want included in the conceptual framework or someplace else? And so we're trying to give a matrix in terms of guiding the discussion so that we could give some pragmatic views and direction and thoughts to the ISB.
Thank you, Linda. So I open the floor for discussion.
Roger?
Well, I could talk for a long time about those two presentations, but I won't. I just wanted to pick up on almost the last theme, which is, can a conceptual framework be delivered in the timescale that the ISB are contemplating? And I think it should be, but I do feel that it's not going to be like the last one, where it was set in stone 25 years ago, whatever, and people think, well, that's going to be in, this one's going to be in stone for the next 25 years. I think there's been a lot of really good discussion today, for example. There's a lot of good thoughts. I don't think that there's time to encapsulate them all in the timescale you're talking about, nor do I think we should. But I do think we should say that there are some topics that we're going to have to come back to, and perhaps even develop a conceptual framework more on a real-time basis going forward, rather than saying, well, we'll come back to it in 2040. So I recommend the ISB stick with their timetable, but do make it clear that there is more thinking to be done in certain areas, some of which have been discussed today.
Yeah, and the question is, of course,
even, you know, if I was convinced that taking 2 years extra would give us, would end up with us providing all the answers, I would immediately sign for it.
Yeah.
But that's not very likely. These are the questions that we are now have now on the table, people have been wrestling with for decades, and I don't think that time in itself is going to provide the answers. So,
just one follow-up. I mean, for example, discount rate or interest rates. So
yes.
That's the major piece of work.
Yes.
It's not going to be done, I don't think, within the timetable. But when you do come to an answer, I think it is possible to come to an answer, then I think that should be bolted back into the conceptual framework rather than leaving it as a separate item.
Yes. Françoise?
I would very much start where Liesl started and say that there has been a call for the revision of the conceptual framework so that people could see what basis the board developed standards. And when that call was made, I think the chapters on measurement and linked to some aspects of presentation, at least, were very much in demand. So on this basis, I would also be in agreement with Roger that the current timeline should be adhered to and meet the demand that has been expressed so strongly in the most consistent fashion as possible. So if on measurement, if I relate to Linda's slides, probably that would mean a little day. So further rationalize the preliminary views because they have received strong support. People feel that they can be rationalized. Let's have that as an objective in the exposure draft stage. And whether some aspects are left out or not is a possibility, provided that it doesn't get into having more or less an empty bucket on those issues. Where the debt equity distinction is concerned, I think in a way we have concurred with the analysis that Kim has made. We have not got to the same conclusions. Basically, it's an area which is extremely difficult, and where we, in our comment letter, basically came with the view that the conceptual basis cannot be finalized without having a work which is standard level work be considered at the same time. And so we see value in fact in not postponing the issue, but maybe running the project in parallel, including the standard level guidance, and when that is finished, going into the conceptual framework, what the conceptual basis that will have been developed, that will have been tested with the standard level development.
Thank you, François. Lisa?
Very briefly, things I more or less forgot before. I think mainly people are torn between the timeline and more or less rejecting the previous phased approach and more or less looking for the all-inclusive integrated approach. On the other hand, if you now have to pick and choose what you can do within the timeline, in a way you fall back into a phased approach, but it should be as integrated as possible because obviously there are links. On the debt equity split, I'm sort of torn between what should be in the framework and what shouldn't be in the framework. I guess Kim has mentioned a number of things, and I think, hopefully I didn't just not pick it up, you did not mention what happens with the servicing, meaning people have tried to come up with a solution that you say you can play around more with presentation on the balance sheet or statement of financial position, because you obviously haven't got such a clear cut between equity and liability. However, how we split between debt and equity has consequences on the one hand for what we see as profit and or income or whatever that thing is, what is at the end of the statement of financial performance, and what we see as dividends. And to not have a clear view if the servicing of something is within what you come up with at the end of the period or it's already dividend is difficult. And this is something where I would find it strange if that ended up on a standard level and wouldn't be seen to on the framework level, because then too you have the consequence what you do in consolidation. You have to pick something you consolidate when you consolidate your subsidiaries. So if then you have a cascade of equity going into debt, where do you stop when you consolidate? These are on the one hand sheer mechanics, but it is a consequence of what you do with that at equity. And one critique that has been mushrooming in almost most comment letters was that the discussion paper had a bit of the flavor of remedying current standard setters thinking, or sort of giving the reasoning for why you ended up where you ended up. I think most people would hope that the framework does not feel too bound to the standards that have been issued during the last 3 years or that are about to be issued. But
so I saw those comments too, and I found them hard to understand. I don't think the discussion paper did do that. I mean, a lot of people agree with what you said.
Specifically, I think
just reflected on existing standards.
Specifically, maybe it's sort of the difficulty as people ask for examples, because that's easier to understand.
Or which Kim did, for instance, well, principles but lots of examples.
That immediately gives you examples, and for instance, with the performance reporting, when you say what you recycle and what you not recycle, people think that along those lines you are too close to what you have currently and not stepping back enough to say, well, what we have has been a compromise but not necessarily built on.
It would be interesting to see what happens if we come with concepts that go contrary to IFRS 9, for example.
Well, to a certain extent,
which is not so difficult to do.
I think we have to be brave enough to face that, because it won't get us anywhere to be bound too much to the current standards.
Well, I'm, for example, throughout this all the thinking I do on these issues, I'm more and more coming to the conclusion that finding a definition for OCI is probably impossible to do, because as the Canadian said, it's an exception rather than a rule.
Personally, I would
agree. What does that mean for IFRS 9?
Got to change.
Interesting.
It.
Kevin?
If you look back at the way in which the framework has developed over the years, the lead projects have always been around the definition and recognition of the elements, because we need those pretty much immediately in all standards. And of what we've talked about this morning, the debt versus equity bit is the bit where we have not yet really completed the elements side of life. And some of the issues that Kim raised, and I think there are some others around that debt versus equity split, are going to feed back into our definition of a liability. And I think Kim acknowledged that. So I would put your money on trying to solve debt versus equity to begin with. I wouldn't necessarily try to be too ambitious with that. I think the residual approach is correct. But a number of the issues she's raised really do mean that we're still moving on the definition of a liability. Let's nail that down. And then you've got the first few building blocks of the framework done. What we talked about this morning with Tom's paper is really a recognition that performance and measurement are intertwined, and so is presentation. I think there are a lot of moving parts in that equation that we don't understand very well at this point. I would take a lot more time about that. If you can get a coherent model, whether it's mine or his or anybody else's, across those three parts, you really will have shifted the framework forward. And I would urge you not to rush that. It's difficult, but so meaningful to where this thing's going to go.
What were the presentation, measurement, and was?
And performance.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. We talk about measurement, which is the most controversial area. We believe that general purpose financial reports to provide useful financial information. It is critical for the conceptual framework to state available measurement basis as well as how they should be applied to different assets and liabilities. In my view, key issues identified by the ASAF members are highly important and interrelated, except for a few exceptions. Accordingly, we believe that they should be considered in parallel as part of this project to review the conceptual framework. However, if the IASB were to give the highest priority to finalize the project, we prefer C, replacing current guidance with some basic or initial guidance, or D, replace current guidance by further developing the preliminary views set out in the discussion paper out of the options presented in paragraph 14 of the 6C paper. However, if the IASB were to decide giving utmost priority to finalizing the project within 2 years time frame, we suggest clarifying the three things. First, it is necessary to consider the effect on financial condition as well as financial performance when deciding relevant measurement basis. Second, measurement basis considered relevant in light of financial condition and financial performance can differ, although they are the same in many cases. When these measurement bases are different, then OCI is used as linkage factor to bridge the different measurement bases. Third, measurement bases considered to be relevant in light of financial performance should be determined by reference to whether profit or loss would properly reflect the financial performance of the entity. For having that as ASCG want that you can come up with a consensus about issue regarding profit or loss and OCI. Okay, thank you.
Mary?
Some thoughts skipping across the several different papers raised for today. And a very preliminary reaction to prioritization. Do we expand the time frame to bottom things out more? You know, do we, you know, Roger, you talked about a bolt-in, you know, almost do the standards first and then distill the principles and put them in the conceptual framework, while others noted that there's criticism of the discussion paper for being, you know, some saw it as a distillation of conclusions reached in recent standards. I think trying to chart a course between these different views, it might be, do not feel that we have to hit the same level of development for each of the major subjects, that we should make progress without, you know, but in areas, let's say measurement, which are less developed, don't go too far, but don't do nothing because we lack a perfect answer. But if we took solely a reverse engineering approach, then the conceptual framework might be helpful for interpreting standards that have been issued, but it wouldn't be very helpful to us as a starting point for developing new standards, and it also would be even And that doesn't fit at all with the notion of a presumption that we start with the principles in the conceptual framework. So I think we need to make progress, but I guess what I'm hearing is, don't worry if you think you've got one area bottomed out, that you've got to get everything else to that point. Yeah. And that's kind of the medium between a phased approach and taking forever. As I said, skipping around quite a bit, on definition of liabilities and the equity point, Kim, you said in your paper, equity is the residual, talk about total equity and move away, and end the conceptual framework discussion there. I agree, but I don't, and some of this comes out of discussions at the FASB's conference in January. And many of the cases that were discussed at that conference led me to a conclusion that right now we have only very blunt instruments that kind of distort some of our debt equity conclusions, and that is that there are concerns about transfers of wealth between different classes of shareholders, and people are unhappy with zero accounting recognition or measurement for certain aspects of those transfers, and the only tool we have now is, if you want current recognition or measurement, you have to call it liability, so that the payouts, the entitlement, the participation, gets recognized, and that forces, I think, a desire to have equity or cool. I think your paper suggested pursuing a mezzanine approach so that there's some kind of recognition and measurement of these items. And so I think having only the two tools of it classified as liability or classified as equity may leave us unprepared to answer some questions that I think were developed by Peter in the paper. I think Peter, who did a lot of work in this area, would be the first to say a lot of what was in the discussion paper is standards level material, not conceptual framework. But I think if you start with equity as a residual and think about what the other alternatives are for giving some recognition and measurement to different claims of classes of shareholders, you take some. Kevin's giving me the you're talking nonsense look, but you take some pressure.
He's not even looking at you.
Yeah, that's you take some of the pressure that I think has distorted some of our discussions around definition of liability out of the system. And last. Two comments that I'd like to throw out are specific to Kim's presentation. I thought it was interesting that you were recommending, say, nothing in the conceptual framework about whether there always should be a residual, the putables notion, that should be strictly a standards level conclusion reflecting on the principles. I think there was a lot of thinking at the time the discussion paper was developed about whether that was such a significant conclusion that the board had reached, that we wanted to have some kind of recognition that, at a conceptual level that it might be appropriate. And I'd be interested in hearing other views on that specific point. And last is your list of items or characteristics. To me, that felt very much like standards level material. Rather than conceptual framework, and I would not have thought that was the right thing to explore in a conceptual framework, because I think it would have been a collection of conclusions that we really need to consider at a standards level, rather than something that would in effect tie our hands when we were trying to knit it together into standards level guidance. So I think interested in the putables view, not agreeing with the list of typical characteristics being standards level. would like to think more about if we take the equity as residual narrow, take the equity as residual approach, thinking more about whether we do need some kind of consideration of changes in claims rather than really only having publishing an earnings per share calculation, you know, as the means of reporting that. And then, as I said, thinking about not a phased approach, but recognizing that we'll have different stages of development for different pieces of for different pieces of the framework, and that not being a fault.
Linda?
Thanks. I just want to build off of what Mary just said, and as well express our support for staying on course in one way, shape, or form. I mean, we've just come through an amazing period in financial reporting in terms of what's happening in the world, and we had the agenda consultation. One of the big things that I always worry about now as a full-time standard setter is being relevant to the stakeholders that we are dealing with. And so for the ISB to continue to be relevant, I think it's important that, you know, you said, people told you in the agenda consultation that this was important. And frankly, you know, I have never delved into the conceptual framework before. I was a standard setter for 8 years, never really spent time on that as an aspect, so it's not going to be that easy. So nobody should be upset if it's not perfect. My view, and people who know me well, I always talk about what you have to do and how you do it. And I think in this particular aspect, that's really important. There's what you do accomplish with the conceptual framework, and then there's how you do it and how you communicate it. And the notion of being at different stages, some people could call that a phased approach. Some people would say, you know, this section will be more developed than that section just because of the nature of the section and how much work we've been able to do and where we are. That's fine, however you communicate. But I think communicating of where you are and what your intentions are to the further development of those areas that are less developed is really important. I mean, my prediction is, you're exactly right, Hans, you're going to publish something and there's going to be conflicts with existing standards. There's going to be conflicts with standards that aren't yet issued by the time this all unfolds. And so what will be important is that you talk about that openly and say, you know, that the conceptual framework doesn't override this. This is where you are. So with that, I mean, I think those are all the things that you should think about as a board as you continue the project.
Can I just... I was going to go into the same thing, actually, that... you know, we seem to be getting some sort of consensus that we should push forward. We should concede that some things are not going to be finished and we should work with them. Francois suggested we do maybe in some cases a standard alongside, you know, in parallel and learn from that. So I think that's all right. But your last point's a really interesting one, because the letters were quite diverse in their advice on what we do with standards after we'd finished the conceptual framework, finished in inverted commas, I guess. And there's some were saying we should immediately rush out and change all the standards that are inconsistent. And, you know, I'd be very... I think you're right. We have to get the message out and get our message out that this is not the goal, that this is a living document that goes on and the standards cover various other situations. And, you know, and in our agenda consultation, people... First thing they said is they want a period of calm. They don't want everything changed overnight. And if we went and turned five or six major standards on their heads immediately, I think our constituents wouldn't be very happy.
I don't think so. Lu Jianxiao?
I just want to talk about the Kim's presentation on the definition of the equity and the distinction between the equity and the liability. I believe that at a conceptual level, the topic is very important, because with some financial instruments, they have both features. So it's very difficult to divide both components of the equity and the liability. So if at a conceptual level, we can, first of all, if we can clearly defined the equity, that it's okay, it's the best way, but at the current stage, it seems that it's difficult to clearly define what's the meaning of the equity. So we take the position of the residual approach. But I still think, I agree with Mary that maybe we should do something at the conceptual level to describe what's the equity really mean, or what kind of transaction will increase or decrease the equity, such as the transaction between owners, such as retained earnings or something like that. Let people know that these some transaction should directly recognize in equity, not like or other things. So let people know what's the equity really mean, or what's equity really including, what kind of items. I think it's important at the conceptual level, especially the owner, the transaction with owners, because in China we really have some state-owned enterprises. So there's some transaction with owners. Some in practice maybe it's important to describe the equity transaction or what kind of transaction will increase or decrease equity. I think we should do something at a conceptual level. Secondly, if we take the strict liability approach to define or to measure the equity, so actually the liability, the definition of liability, not only definition of liability, but also the measurement is very important. How we measure the liability, it will determine or it will have impact on the equity components, especially for banks or for financial institutions. Equity is very important, not only to the users, but also for the regulators. So I also believe that if we take the stricter liability approach, measurement is also very important. So today we discuss about the measurement part. I hope this part should also, you know, do more work. It have not only will have impact assets and liability, also will have impact on the equity, and it will be have very important to the users, also to the financial stabilities. This is my point.
On that point, I mean, in the discussion paper there was that statement of movement of equity, which is not, I mean, not very well supported. I mean, hardly supported at all, I think, in the letters. And you've got to concede it mixed up an entity point of view with a proprietary point of view. But it seemed to me, I mean, it would answer some of your questions, and it seemed to me it would provide very useful information. That's why I supported that. As I say, a vast majority said, forget it. Mary mentioned it bridged the gap between sort of earnings per share and what's going on amongst shareholders.
From a stewardship perspective, very interesting information.
Please.
Well, in a way, I think some people might have been taken by surprise and or didn't really think about it enough. Interesting information, I think. No one would really dispute that, but people seem to see a lot of effort in building it up, and some might misunderstand that it means remeasurement of the whole of equity, and there is a huge barrier, which isn't true, but you have to live with what people read, and therefore they come to the wrong but very defensive conclusion. And I think maybe Peter had a very neat way of conveying some messages, however he met with resistance because it wasn't parceled up nicely enough.
Thanks. Yeah, just to respond to Mary and some of the other points. I mean, absolutely, I certainly believe that the individual equity claims needs to be addressed. I just think that perhaps it would be better addressed in the standard rather than the conceptual framework, just as in the conceptual framework, we don't deal with individual liabilities. We just deal with liabilities as a general classification. So that was why I felt that if we are defining equity as the residual, well, it's that total equity is the residual. But I absolutely agree that there needs to be some, you know, analysis given in the financial statements of the different claimants, or the different equity participants. So certainly think that it's relevant, but as I say, I just perhaps didn't think that it would sit in the conceptual framework. And I think for me, the interesting thing where you can see all these moving parts is that, you know, if equity is defined as the residual, well, then total equity by definition is reliant on the measurement and the recognition of assets and liabilities. So if we now sort of get into, well, let's find a measurement basis for equity, well then...
No, but that was the point Lisa was making, that we weren't saying that.
No, but I'm just saying is that there are some views around then, because, for example, and I think this comes back to what is the purpose of financial statements, because if I'm an investor in an entity, am I looking to those financial statements to see what the value is of my investment? And I think that, well, I mean, I think the right answer is no. I shouldn't be able to just expect to determine the value from looking at the financials. Whereas I think there could be some views which say, well, that is the purpose of that. So I agree, and I think that was perhaps where there were some concerns around, and maybe it was the language in the discussion paper, around the remeasurements is, well, what was that measurement meant to be? Was it meant to be a current measurement, or was it simply meant to be, if this is my total equity, well, how much of the total equity is sort of allocated to that particular class, that particular class, that particular class? So I think perhaps maybe that was where the confusion arose, could have been in the use of the language. So I certainly agree that, and I think we actually in practice are seeing a couple of interesting issues where you've got so many different classes of equity with different participation rights. And there seems to be almost this view whereby we tend to disregard the rights of others other than the true ordinary shareholders as such. So you've got things like participating options, where, yes, they're not sort of current, normal, ordinary shareholders, but they certainly have rights. Now, how do we reflect their rights in the total equity? And, yes, there are things like in the earnings per share, et cetera, but I think that some of those areas are potentially flawed and certainly need to be addressed. So wholeheartedly support addressing it. I guess the question is just perhaps, you know, where it should be. Also, just on the puttables, yeah, I guess, again, I think for me the point is that in the conceptual framework, we need to have a starting point, which I think if the conclusion is, well, equity is a residual, well, if something is a liability, then how do we get it out of the liability into a residual? So, yes, I think by default there could be an entity that actually there is no residual because everything is a liability. And for me, as I say, at a conceptual level, I don't think that we should really be trying to address that concern. As I say, I think the conceptual framework should be conceptual. So, as I say, for me, at the conceptual level, I have no problem that there may not actually be equity if everything is a liability. I mean, maybe just to, you know, I know a couple of people have raised the concern around, well, maybe my request sort of for addressing some of these common elements is that it wasn't really to say, well, here are a whole lot of examples, but I think it is to try and drill down on the definition. So, i.e., what does it mean that there's a present obligation? What does it mean that it results from past event? So, and we can... And yes, I know some people might feel, well, is it more relevant in a standard? And I suppose if one looks at IAS 32, there is some of that discussion there. I'm just a little bit concerned that maybe at the moment, and from what, you know, the practice and the discussion that have emerged over many years, that maybe at the conceptual level, some of these definitions are a little bit too abstract still. And I suppose it was just to say, is that shouldn't there be some more meat as such to those concepts. So rather than say, here's a whole list of examples, and someone's going to say, well, my instrument is not the same as that, it was more to try and establish. So if something is contingent, well, what does that mean? Does it mean that I have a present obligation, or does it mean that I don't because that contingency hasn't happened? So it was more in that respect rather than, say, a list of examples. So that was really what I was driving at, to try and give a little bit more granularity as such to the concepts in the conceptual frame.
Alexandru?
I will just call to attention the fact that this DATUACT classification is probably, at my opinion today, the hottest stop in terms of trying to bypass IFRS standards. So, and I see a lot of diversity in practice internationally. So same instruments accounted for in different ways. So I don't know if it's in the concept of framework or if any other place in the standard, but I believe that some clarification of that is needed from a very pragmatic point of view. There is strong diversity in practice along this topic.
Equal.
Okay, thank you. We are the minor or the only one body to ask ISB to consider whether to establish the third category in addition to liabilities and equities. So this is because separation between liability and equity can be considered in light of two different objectives. One is to show the solvency of the entity, which is the current line. The other one is line to whom the most residual profit or loss or comprehensive income belong. I think residual equity holder and other equity holder in the current definition are different. And the most residual equity holder is future such equity holder is the investor. Most sophisticated decision is required. So EPS is needed just for them. PER is so. So the differentiation between the such people and the other equity holder are important. But our analysis is not so deep at this moment. So at this moment, on the other hand, we disagree with ISB's primary view to require the different classes of equity to be remeasured, because different classes wealth usually moves with the same direction with most residual equity holder. So maybe remeasurement doesn't work well, but at least at this moment, more segregated information for most residual equity holder is needed.
Kevin?
I just wanted to clarify a couple of things, or clarify one thing and just make a brief comment on the other. Whilst I support a residual approach, what I was implying in my comments before is that when we get to that point, it puts a lot of pressure on the definition of a liability. And sometimes, you know, we accept exceptions from our rules and we don't really question why it makes sense, but we treat it as an exception. And the fair value put, I think, is a good example of that. We sort of like the accounting, but we think it's an exception. Is it really an exception? Because if you go back to the definition of a liability, there's an asymmetry in it compared to the definition of an asset. If you forego an inflow, it's not a liability under our definitions. If it were, then issuing of shares instead of something else would involve a foregoing of an inflow. That might lead you to be able to solve when instruments are in fact liabilities, and distinguish them from those circumstances in which the owners of the entity proportionately are taking away part of the entity, which is the call option that owners in co-ops and others have. So all of that's to say there are some pretty tricky issues in that liability versus equity thing, and we need to sort some of those out back in liabilities, and then I think the nature of the residual interest helps you a little bit in doing that. Why I grimaced at Mary, and it wouldn't be the first time, but I'm sorry. You know, and I've said it before, I really think a missing part of our discussion on the DP is common information needs of users. The reason that has been subtle and important in the past is so that we don't go chasing down every rabbit hole the interest of individual users. So my test as to whether or not I want it in the framework is, what would the other users make of this besides the shareholders? I'm stretching to think what that might be. And then pragmatically, and this is not a new idea, this has been tried out a few times, and it doesn't even measure what it purports to measure. I don't think it's worth the effort.
We go, and then we're going to have a small break.
Kevin, King, a very simple question to you. The DP has two chapters related to liability and equity. One is about provide additional guidance on the contingent and other liabilities, and another one on the distinction between liability and equity, and the propose to use statement changes in equity to present transfer of wealth which equals support. On the second one, I agree with your concern, and I'm not sure whether I agree with you, leave those questions to the setting level, but concern I understand, because, you know, further classify the equity into subcategory will be not so easy, and also to define measurement basis also will be controversial. So I fully agree with you. But on the first part, I not fully understand your concern. You know, I think our intention is to explore different alternatives we call view A, view B, view C. They will be principle based, but using those examples to test whether the views or the proposed views definition will be viable enough. And our intention here may not use those examples in the final DPO, final ED, and conceptual framework. Just at discussion paper level, use those examples to see whether view one, view B, view C is viable enough. And I'm not sure whether you generally agree with this direction, you know, to try to explore different views. Example, just to test whether you will accept. I'm not sure why I ask you whether you agree with those view one, view B, view C, or you say totally nonsense.
Okay, if I may respond. Yes. Thanks, Wegu. Yeah, I think that, as I said, while I believe that there needs to be a particular, you know, conceptual starting point, so I understand that whichever approach is finally decided upon, my concern, as I say, if one looks at the practice over many years and one looks at the things that have arisen, things like, which, you know, for example, IFRIC 21 on levies, we're now sitting with rate-regulated activities and things like that, and chatting to Alexandra yesterday, where in Brazil they've got an obligation to distribute at least 25% of their profits on an annual basis. So I think the reason why I'm saying that I think that the conceptual framework needs a little bit more sort of meat to some of the concepts is to really facilitate a better understanding. So yes, I understand that maybe the intention in developing the discussion paper and maybe even the ED, but maybe not, the intention was to have some examples, but ultimately not. I am a little bit concerned that it's still not going to really be that useful in making sure there's a clear, consistent view of the principles. Because as I said, if my take on the process to issue IFRIC 21 was that many people were of the view that there is a liability at this point or there is no liability, and each particular commentator was adamant that they were applying the definition of a liability in terms of the conceptual framework and applying IS 37, yet they were coming up with such different answers. And for me, that just illustrates that something is missing. And is the something that's missing is that the concepts are at a too high level, and that people then have so different views as to when I do have a present obligation. So some people might be of the view that I only have a present obligation once the contingency actually occurs. Does it matter if it's within my control, not within my control? Other people are of the view which then says, well, no, if it's not within my control, then I couldn't avoid it, so I already have a present obligation. And I think, so that's why for me, I am concerned, and it goes back to Kevin, that if we're relying, you know, if equity is going to be the residual, we have to make sure we've got a robust definition and model for the liabilities. And I just think, as I said, looking at things which have emerged over the past, you know, however many years, to me, currently the framework doesn't provide a robust basis for the recognition. So that's why, as I say, that I really believe that the final conceptual framework needs to contain a lot more. So it's an expansion of those high-level principles to really say, well, what is the present obligation? What is the triggering event, etc.? I'm worried that if it's too conceptual, we're going to sit with the same situation. And then when it comes to setting standards, as I mentioned, if commentators have a different perspective when asked for at a particular standard level, do they support something? Well, we're asking people who don't necessarily have a consistent understanding of the principles, which therefore, again, we have all these diverse views on, no, it is a liability or it isn't a liability. And I really would like to have more clarity at the conceptual framework level, because while the conceptual framework, yes, is for the board to set standards, it should also provide the commentators with a proper foundation on which to comment, because those standards are meant to be set in accordance with that framework. So if commentators have totally different starting points, well, how are we ever going to make sure that we then have standards which are consistent and that are consistent with the framework?
All right. Thank you very much.